Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Welcome to Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I'm your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sundays of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who's caring for a brain injured person, or anyone who has any interest in learning more about brain injury. I always like to say that brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And folks, it does. It's really a scary thing. We don't ever think about it until we think about it all the time. But the Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. But most folks do not even know about brain injury, and I know I never did, not until it landed on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I tried to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks to understand what survivors and caregivers experience. And frankly, I'm really excited to be on the air this month. I'll be on the air on the first and the third Sunday of each month. And the month of March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. So although I do make every effort to make us all aware of brain injury every month of the year, it's particularly exciting to be able to do so in March when so many other people are also joining in and bringing this to the attention of everyone. So on the third Sunday of the month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers and to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And then on each first Sunday of the month, I host a discussion panel or even one-to-one, as we're doing tonight, discussion to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, neural fatigue, anger, any symptoms, various symptoms of brain injury. So for those of you who may be new to my show, here's just a snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005. When my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about that on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And this is the part of the show I always remember to say, have a paper and pencil nearby so you can jot down some URLs that I always pass out something on every show. So let's say that one again, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And on that site, I share my story about David's brain injury. And there is a section there called On the Air Show Menu, which has about, it's more than 200 shows up there already. I started in 2014 hosting Another Fork in the Road, just trying to bring awareness to the general population, to the world, frankly. And so I hope that you'll check out my website there, that blog, and see what's there. There are interviews from survivors and caregivers. They're each called, one is called Survivors Speak Out, and the other is called a Caregiver Speak Out. And there are 20 questions that people answer, and then their story is told through those questions. And so it's a really good platform to check into, because if you're new to the brain injury world, which we all are at some point, it's a good place to start to find out that you're not alone. There are thousands. There are millions of people that have brain injury. So so you are not alone. And yet, when I started off in this journey in 2005, when my husband had his brain injury, I thought I was alone until I met a couple people in the hospital that also had brain injury at the same time. But they weren't very much help, because they were at the beginning of this journey too. So it took a while to figure out where to go for help, or what places to look into it, to tap in for information. And, you know, so what is it now? For us, we just passed our 19th year. We just celebrated 19 extra years of David's life, because his neurosurgeon told me he had a 1 in 600 chance of making it through his first brain surgery. And then he had two more within that same 2 weeks. So three brain surgeries in 2 weeks. So, So it was all brand new then. It's not brand new now, but anyhow. So on my first show, when I started Another Fork in the Road, I interviewed David. First of all, I did four shows of my own to tell the story of what had happened to us. And then I interviewed David, so that I could get his perspective too. And, so David also contributes a lot to the blog, to the Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury blog.com. So you can just check that out in your free time and see what's there. And also, like I said, go check out the other survivors, the other caregivers that are on the site. And you can just look for On the Air Show Menu. It's on the tab under the category section on the right sidebar. There are two on the air shows, but you have to go for the menu one, because that will show give you the 200 or more shows there. If you want to know about anybody or any topic that I might have addressed on that blog, just go to the search box and type in the word. Tonight we're going to be talking about irritability after brain injury. And so if you type in that word tomorrow, irritability, you're going to find a show that you can link back to. You're going to hear this show again if you want to, or pass the link on to someone else who you think might find the show useful. So try that. So you can also learn more about brain injury from my book called Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. And it was published in 2018 by Right Life Publishing. And you can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as a print book, as an e-book, and as an audio book in all your local book haunts. I mean, if they're not there, ask for them. They can order them, especially libraries, people. Ask in the libraries, and you can get you can get them all in there if you just request it. They might take them some time, or you can go to Barnes & Noble, you can go to Amazon, or to any of your indie bookstores, and you can get it. On Amazon, you could probably have it tomorrow if you have Prime. So anyway, yeah. And I was very lucky to be able to be the reader on my audiobook of Prisoners Without Bars. That was really an experience. And I'm really excited about that, because I feel like so many brain injury survivors have lost the capability of reading, but they can listen to a book. So it's not all is lost there. You can still hear the book. So you can find out more about me at my website, and that's at donnaspigarski.com. And you can, and then so tonight basically, and then I should say, if you want to find out about me and you didn't get the chance to write down any of these URLs, just Google me. Google me at Donna Figurski or Donna O'Donnell Figurski or Prisoners Without Bars or whatever. If you put my name in, you're going to come up with more than you have ever wanted to know. You'll learn more about any more than you ever wanted to know. So let's get into the show right now, and I hope that you're going to find my show fun and informative. And I hope that you will visit the shows of the other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night from 7 o'clock until 10 p.m., and that is Pacific time. And then on the weekends, we start our shows at 5:30 running, so you get two shows on a weekend, 5:30 till the 7 o'clock slot, and the 7 o'clock slot host will join you. So, and of course, all of our shows are archived. After we go live right now, we're live on the air, and our shows are aired in 36 countries as well as every single state in the United States, and then those 36 countries. But, of course, now think about it. If you have a computer, you can get on at any time, no matter where you are, even if we're not airing live. You can listen to the podcast, to the archived show. So we're always there. So all those 200 shows I told you about, you can find them. And I think we've covered topics over and over with different guests, so you'll be able to hear different perspectives from different guests. And like brain injury is brand new. I mean, it's not brand new, but it's unique. I should say that. It's unique to the person. Each brain injury is different. Each is like a snowflake, where you'll not find more than one of the same snowflake. It's like a fingerprint, where there is only one of your fingerprint. You're not going to find another one like yours in the world. So, and brain injury is like that too, because of the complications and that happen in the brain and the areas that might have been damaged and the combinations of all that. But that's if you want to find out more about that, just Google it. You know, Google it on my blog on that surviving traumatic brain injury. We talk about that a lot too. So on that note, I'd like to ask you to sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And if you are in the kitchen doing the dishes, go ahead, do them too. You can do whatever you want. Just listen in alongside. So tonight, as I mentioned already, we're going to be talking about coping with irritability after brain injury. Okay. I mean, yeah, irritability happens to everybody. We know that. But many survivors experience different forms of irritability after a brain injury. And that's not surprising if you think about it. But irritability, angst, agitation, frustration, no matter what you want to call them, can turn a person's daily life upside down. Irritability, it not only affects the survivor who must personally deal with it, but it also impacts the lives of family members and friends who are loving or caring for that survivor. And the survivor may have been the most easygoing person prior to the brain injury, but because of the damage incurred by within the brain, irritability or angst to the frustration, all of that can occur and play a big, huge part in personality change. So tonight, that's going to be our topic. We're going to be talking about irritability after brain injury and how we deal with it. But first, I want to introduce my guest tonight. Deb Brandon is a brain injury survivor, and she is the author of her book, But My Brain Had Other Ideas, a memoir of recovery from brain injury. And Deb is also a retired professor of mathematics at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And I always like to tell everybody this because I'm always proud of it. I was born in Pittsburgh, right south of Pittsburgh, McKeesport. So I consider them my old stomping grounds. Not only was I born there, I went to college there too. So I'm in front of my husband. And so Pittsburgh has a very warm spot in my heart. And so I'm also in Deb lived there, but she's not there now either. She moved on. But she was there when I first met her. So anyhow, I'm also excited to say that Deb and I are co-authoring a book together. So yes, she has her book, but my brain had other ideas about her experience as a brain injury survivor. And my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, tells the story of how David and I worked our way through the maze and are still working our way through the maze of brain injury. But Deb and I are writing a book together, and we're almost finished with the third and final draft before we get to submit it. So it's been a fun ride. And the working title is Surviving Brain Injury Together, A Conversation Between Survivor and Caregiver. So we talk about a lot of the stuff that we talk here on the radio and put it down into work, you know, in perspective with our lives, and hope that that's going to help you, the reader out there, to understand how we got through our TBI maze. And hope, you know, I'm sure that, like, you're never gonna find everything in that book exactly to match yours. It won't. But a lot of it will, and you'll identify with it and say, maybe I can do this. That's what Donna did when this happened to David, or Deb did this when this was happening in her family. And that's what's happening in my family now, so maybe I'll try that. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to get the word out about a brain injury and how it can help others, because we're using our experiences. We didn't choose to be in this position, but since we are, and we know so many other people are going to join us, this club just keeps growing and growing by leaps and bounds, which is frankly too bad. But at least there's something to put your hands on out there. In 2005, when this happened to me and David, I should say when it happened to David and ultimately to me too, there wasn't much out there. I couldn't find things about brain injury. I didn't have all the access to other people's thoughts and radio shows and social media. But it's out there now. And we're trying to contribute to that mass of information so that it will help you. So I'm going to tell you can read about Deb on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And again, in that search box, just type her name, Deb Brandon, Brandon. And look for a Survivor's Speak Out interview. It will pop up. And so will many shows of Another Fork in the Road, on which Deb has appeared. She has been a panelist. I don't even know how many shows. Deb, we should go back and count them someday and find out how many shows you've been on, because you've been on a lot since I think it was 2019 when we first met. And then of course you can also go to Deb's website at debbrandon.com, debbrandon.com. Then check them out. But wait, not now. Check them out after. Write those URLs down and check them out tomorrow if you're on the East Coast, because it'll be late when the show is at a little bit for you. So now, welcome, Deb. I'm so glad to have you here with me this evening. And before we tackle this irritating topic, pun intended, can you tell us a little bit of how you became a member of the brain injury community?
First of all, it's lovely to be here again. I always enjoy the being on the show with you. So I have tangles of malformed blood vessels in my brain, and they can bleed. Two of mine bled and wreaked havoc on my life. And the only known treatment to prevent future bleeds is to remove them surgically. Mm. So I ended up undergoing 3 brain surgeries. And that was my introduction to the brain injury community.
Wow. What's with this number 3? You had 3, David had 3, that frankly, I just read about somebody who had 20 brain surgeries. Actually, I just met him on, what was it? I was just in a brain injury meeting, and this man said he had 20 brain surgeries. I said, holy moly, how does anybody cope with that? But yeah, it's pretty gruesome when you have to live your life in a manner like that. So, but I'm glad both of you came through with, successful results, or I guess I could say as successful as is possible after such damage has been done to your brain. But yeah, so, and I guess the other thing is we probably never would have met if you guys hadn't had a brain injury. Not the best reason to meet, but, you know, it's a consequence. It's, you know, at least we have a, not a consequence, I forgot the word. But it's the good that came out of it, I guess, you know. So.
Well, quite frankly, I believe that, in my case at least, the gains far outweighed the losses. I'm not unhappy that it happened. I really am not unhappy. I think it turned me into a much better person with a fuller life and all that wonderful stuff. So life is good as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that is really good to hear. And I'm always amazed, and I mean, not by what that you just said it now, because I've known this for a lot of years from you, but I'm always amazed when I hear that from brain injury survivors, that they feel that their life is better, that they like themselves more after their brain injury than they did even before, or that their life has changed for them in a positive manner. I always find that to be unfathomable almost, you know? How can that be? Now, yeah, David is very seriously affected by physical disabilities since his brain injury. He is not impaired by any cognitive difficulties at all. His memory is there. His emotional status is still there, very gentle, calm. So it didn't affect him in that way, not in the ways that we're going to talk about tonight. But it does impact our lives a lot because of the physical problems that he has. So I can't say that I'm glad or that I can't say I'm really happy that this happened, but it did, okay? So there's nothing we can do about that. It did. So at that point, you have to make a choice. You make that choice of going up the road or you go down that slippery slope. And the going up the road is difficult. I mean, it's always more difficult, I think, to go up a mountain than to come down. Actually, that's not even true. I don't like coming down mountains. But anyhow, but the point of the thing is it's usually harder to ascend than it is to descend. But it's better. We have to do that. Otherwise, you would on the slippery slope, which could take you to nothingness, to depression, to very unhappy, unhappy times. So I think that's where we go. That's where I am, anyhow. That's where I am with this. So, but I am always surprised when someone tells me that their life is better. And we had a friend of ours in New Jersey who was the first to tell me that. And I was like, geez, are you kidding? Yeah, David. He said, how do you feel about your life now that this has happened to you? And I was like, geez, well, that's a weird question. You know, there's only one answer. And then she answered a question herself and realized that she was much happier in her new life, yet she was a prisoner of a wheelchair. You know, she couldn't walk at all by herself. She lived by herself, and she did get around her apartment. I saw her, but it was really difficult. And I was like, how can that be that she could be happier? But she said she was. And you come up with it and say it, and I've heard it so many times on the interviews that I've done on Survivors Speak Out. And yet I still, like, marvel at that. Like, how can that? So I guess I'm not at that point of happiness of that David had this, but there have been a lot of positive things that have happened. A lot of friends that we have met since then and everything. So anyhow, we've talked a lot about that in past programs too. So I want to get started right now on irritability so we get enough time to talk about that, because I think that's a situation, a feeling, an emotion that happens to a lot of people. And, you know, well, I mean, everybody, we all get irritated at times. We all do. Everybody does. I don't think there's anybody on the planet that won't get irritated. But, you know, for example, you're late for an appointment across town, and you seem to be getting every single red light. Ah, yeah, the cause for irritability. Boy, that used to happen to me when I was taking my hour commute to my job after we moved down to Nutley. And I would, you know, get off the highway. After three highways, I'd get off and then go to the local roads. And I would sit at these lights, and I'm like, but I'm going to be late. The kids are going to get there before me. And I started way early. So, irritability, definitely. Or think about this scenario. You're trying to get your two-year-old ready for preschool, but before you get the second shoe on, he's already taken off the first one. And that's a thought that I just came up with, because I have a two-year-old granddaughter now. And, and she goes to preschool. And those kinds of things do happen, you know, and they think it's funny. So while you're trying to get the third shoe back on, they're taking off the fourth shoe, and they're trying to do it the fifth time, and they're taking off the sixth shoe. You know what I mean? It just goes back and forth. But so cause for irritability. If you're a parent of a teen, you've got dinner on the table. It's getting cold. Everybody's around here. Everybody's ready, but your teenager is nowhere in sight. Again, cause for irritability. So you get the picture. I mean, everybody, you could probably pick out your own causes and probably pick out about 10 of them on your, you know, list them off on 10 fingers really fast. Because we all experience it. We all experience irritability. But it passes, and it's forgotten about in time. Now, change the scenario to a person living with a brain injury. I was talking about neurotypical people here before. You know, people who are just in a normal life, normal family, no brain injury. And those kinds of things are happening to them too. Now, change the scenario again to that person who is living with a brain injury, and add in various complications caused by the brain injury. And I can think about a million right now. Memory loss, lack of organization, physical disabilities that impede mobility or clear speech like David has, difficulty with concentration, which so many survivors have told me that they have difficulties with, headaches, sensitivity to light and noise, blurry vision, confusion, the list goes on, folks. It just goes on and on. I could list a million more, but I don't need to. You get the picture on that, too. So life is confusing for survivors of brain injury, and understandably so. Yet still, it's difficult to live in a state of irritability, frustration, angst, or agitation for undetermined amounts of time. And it's exhausting. It just takes everything out of you. You can't be feeling happy when you're feeling those emotions. And so I want to take some time tonight to identify irritability. I want to take some time to figure out its causes, or to point to a few causes, and what are some of its triggers. And hopefully we can come up with some strategies that may be helpful to you out there. So irritability is caused by a person becoming upset over something, and it can be a little something like a spilling a glass of water. Okay, that's a little irritability. Okay, so you spilled it on the table, you spilled it on the floor, you wipe it up. Spilling it on your computer keyboard, ooh, big irritability. That happened to me once. Yeah, that caused a big irritability. And or something more substantial, not than the keyboard, but by just spilling the water, like forgetting your best friend's birthday, the dinner that you were invited to. And you can substitute any cause that relates to you. Again, pick them off on your fingers. I bet you there are a lot of them. So, Deb, do you ever have times of irritability? And if so, what kind of things set you off and cause that irritability for you?
Well, certainly during the first couple of years, there was a lot of cause for irritability. I mean, I was, you know, you find yourself not being able to do so much that was that you didn't even think of. It was so easy pre-injury. And you're struggling a lot of the time. And you continue struggling. It does make you irritable at the very least. And it's, unfortunately, within a family, at some point, it's going to come out. You're going to let it out, and you're going to lash out at someone. But as I said, the constant frustration during the, certainly during the first few years, it's just daily, because you're trying to do stuff, and you, certainly at the beginning, the first couple of years, you remember that you still have a memory of how easy it was, and you're still comparing your life now to what it was before. That's a, you know, that's essentially a daily thing.
Yeah.
You go, why is this so hard now? It's not fair, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So so with all that frustration and grief, these all come out as being irritable, but now I just shrug it off most of the time. I'm irritable because I couldn't do things, or the people don't understand why I'm having trouble, or don't understand what kind of trouble I'm having. Like, for instance, remembering my passwords. Luckily, my now ex-husband suggested I write all of them down and put them in an envelope to have after the brain surgeries. That really helped me. But so I didn't remember to put all my passwords down, so there were some that I forgot. And it's, I mean, it's little things. For instance, I was buying groceries. I tried to pay with my with cash, and I looked at the bills I had in my hand, and there were, you know, I had a $20 bill, two 20s, a 10, and a 5, and I think the bill was something like $27, and I couldn't figure out which bills to use. I think it was even 17.
Wow.
And I couldn't figure out which bills to use. So I'm standing there looking at the bills, looking at, you know, what, you know, at the register.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure people thought that I was a total idiot. Instead of giving them the 20, I gave them the 40 to play it safe. And I got the honest looks.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, luckily, my sense of humor came to the rescue. And I chuckled to myself, yep, you're an idiot. And it wasn't too bad. But at the time, it was so embarrassing. So there's all this stuff emotionally, you're all over the place at first. And this all these changes and the psychological issues, emotional issues, they do. They lead to irritability. There's no question about it. But now it's just not, I just laugh at it. I mean, half the things that I still have problems with, I find them funny. You know, it's sort of, oh, here we go again. Deb has fallen through a hole in her brain again. You know, that kind of thing. And
So, what do you think made you? What made you change like that? I mean, what made you? You were feeling those feelings of inadequacy and feeling stupid, frankly, when you said you were an idiot. What made that turn? Like you said, now it doesn't bother you as much. Or are you more capable at this point, or what? What happened?
Well, two things. A, I'm more capable, but there's still, you know, there's still residual deficits that do funny things to my life. But also, I mean, I just, I mean, the humor came in fairly early. I mean, when I was going in for the surgeries, a friend and I came up with a list of things that you don't want to hear your neurosurgeon say. You know, things like, ooh, what happens when we poke this area? You know, ooh, that's so that. Things like that. And so the sense of humor got me through the worst of it. And now it's just, I mean, I've always had a wry sense of humor, which, you know, at times morbid. But I've honed it over the years, and it's always there. I can always see the absurd in things, the ridiculous. And I find myself, you know, when I was teaching, in one of my teaching evaluations, a student wrote, "You really want to see and sit in the front of the class? You can hear the funny stuff she's muttering to herself." And and it, as I said, I see the absurd in things very, very easily, and at times actually makes me laugh at things that it's not actually appropriate, but. But again, you know, it's part, you know, I see it as part of who I am. I don't know. I think a lot of it was things got better and it became easier to laugh at things. But even now there are times when, you know, because I still have issues of sensory overload. So there are times, especially when I'm tired, when I can't just go to meet up with people because I can't deal with all the sensory input. So there are times I have to cancel things at the minute. I used to get really, you know, I'd feel, oh, my God, I'm being rude. And now, you know, okay, there's not much I can do about it. Might as well just laugh at it and, you know, be okay with it. And that's what I do for this part. It's just, you know, it's been, what, 15, 16, 17 years now. It's part of life.
So a lot of it sounds to me like it's time has helped as you've healed more through the time and readjusted your thinking process as well, it sounds like. Because the triggers that you're talking about, the feelings of feeling inadequate or worrying about that others are going to think that you're an idiot, you know, you're stupid. Those things, you know, we all worry about those kinds of things. And then when you're standing there with money in your hand and you're an adult and you can't, you know, parse out the right bills to pay your bill, it's almost like when I was in Germany, and I had to use the Deutschmarks at the time, you know, and I was like, I don't know how to do this, you know, and you don't feel very smart, you feel very inadequate, and then the frustration comes in, and like you said too, the frustration about thinking, well, I used to be able to do this, I used to be able to pay for my groceries with dollar bills and coins, and now I can't, what is that making you feel? How is it making you feel? And you feel maybe ashamed? And then you also mentioned comparing abilities from your pre and post injury. That same thing. I used to be able to do it. Or comparing yourself to others. Like, okay, she has a brain injury and I have a brain injury. How come she can do what she can do? I mean, David could do that with you. David could say, well, why can't I walk like Deb walks? Why can't I talk like Deb walks? And you might want to say, well, why can't I process this like you had difficulty processing your math when you went back to teach as a professor of mathematics. You had a major problem with not being able to understand addition and subtraction. And so you're there saying, well, geez, why can't I do this? Or why can't I do it as well? David, that didn't affect David. He didn't have any problem with his addition or subtraction or his calculus or algebra or whatever else. Now, me, even without a brain injury, I would have had difficulties with all of those, but that's a different story. So, yeah. So what are some strategies you can use then to get over these feelings of negativity?
Well, okay, so that's the other thing is you learn to cope and you learn to accommodate. So, for instance, when I trouble with the bills, with paying my bill with cash, I just started paying with a credit card. When I went to a grocery store, I used to always pay with cash. Now it's automatic that I pay with a credit card. Learn to 100% compensate and to cope, and then it becomes automatic because it becomes a habit. So a lot less becomes frustrating, even if you now it doesn't even occur to me to pay with cash when I can pay with a credit card. I forget where I was, but it was an only cash transaction thing, and I still had a little trouble, and I had to laugh at myself. Between things getting better and compensation techniques and coping mechanisms, life does get easier. I don't know. I mean, it's just you get used to it. And when people look at you funny, when people look at me funny, I laugh at them because they're twits as far as I'm concerned.
You make your own accommodations. Another thing I think that when you have these kinds of feelings of negativity and you're down on yourself because of it, it might be a good thing to find somebody, find a person that you can trust to talk about it. Get it out in the open. Yeah. Don't hide it. Don't kind of keep it inside and think, oh, I'll figure it out somehow. Talk about it because what we're doing right now, bringing this out into the open, bringing out the different things that cause people to feel those negative feelings about themselves and to brainstorm the strategies that you might be able to use. We might say something tonight, I hope we say something tonight, that will trigger you, someone out there to say, hey, maybe I'll try that. That might work. So finding somebody to talk with that you trust is one thing. Another thing I think is really important, and this is something that I've only started to think about within the past, maybe the past 10 years, maybe a little less than that, but using affirmations to shift a negative mindset to a positive one. And, for example, I can do it. I am worthy. Instead of the I feel stupid or I feel like an idiot, I am worthy. I am smart. I might not be smart in this area right now of doling out bills, but I am a smart person. And you had validation of being a smart person as a mathematician at Carnegie Mellon University. I mean, anybody that can teach math at a university level has to have something going on up there. And that's not something I would ever have. I mean, I took my class, my last math class that I took in order to become a teacher, was a terror to me. And that's the reason why it was last, because I thought I have to do this in the summer when I'm not working, when I might have a little bit more time between my other two classes and my two children I'm raising and taking care of. But I was petrified of it. So, you do figure out what to do for that. And so I commend you for being able to be at that level of teaching math and even returning to it. So affirmations, I am capable of, put in the blank, anything. What are you capable of? So, go ahead, Deb.
Well, one of the things, actually, when it came to being a mathematician, I wasn't sure, because my sequential thinking was damaged. I was really afraid. I mean, being a mathematician was part of my identity, and I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to get back to that. And even when I started teaching again, I was afraid to teach at a higher level. And so this fear that I've lost that part of myself, that haunted me for a good while. But so it does, I mean, it brain injury really messes with your self-confidence, and you have a lot of self-doubt. And these, again, you're right. I mean, there's all this negative stuff beating you, and you have to somehow pull yourself out of that state of mind. But it's not, you know, it's not always possible. It's easy to say, maybe you could try harder, maybe you should try this, maybe this will work. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't always work, and there are times when you wallow in it. There are times when you get really frustrated, where you grieve for your losses. There's all this negative stuff going on, and somehow you have to build yourself up so that you can get past it, at least in some sense. And it happens naturally as you heal and as you learn coping mechanisms and compensation techniques, but it doesn't fully cure you. You don't recover fully. There's always some stuff missing, always residual deficits, which, as I said, can bring irritability. And so that irritability is always there, but to varying degrees. And as you progress in your recovery, it decreases in intensity and frequency. And you reach a point that it doesn't affect you so badly. Yeah, you're irritable, and then you go, oh, I'm irritable. I wonder why. Is it? And then it hits you. Oh, it's because I was really tired, and I overdid things. And you become,
I'm better at reflection. And I think it's because
I've tried to understand what happened to me, the enormity of what happened to me. And in order to do that, I've had to reflect on my identity before and after the brain injury. I've had to reflect on what my life is like now versus what happened before, this kind of thing. So within those, once you have a label for things or a potential cause, it really helps you get past the irritability or how the irritability affects you. It really minimizes it.
So you can't completely get...
Go ahead. I thought you had something more to say. Oh, I thought you were ready to say something else. Okay. Yeah, no, you can't completely get rid of it. You're right. But, you know, you can come to terms with it. You can look it in the eye and level it somewhat if you can. Those are the negative triggers. Those are the kinds of that we just talked about, feelings of negativity and the triggers that happen there. I want to move on now. I just want to go back to that affirmations, because I think affirmations can be used as often as you want or need them. And I think they are also a positive way of changing those negative thoughts into self-care and providing a more healthy outlook on your life. And so so for affirmations, I know writers do a lot of affirmations. They have little tags all over their computers saying, I will write today. BIC, butt in chair. You know, it's just like put your butt in your chair and you're going to write no matter what. If you have to sit there for an hour and do nothing, you're going to write, you know, or you're going to stare at that screen until you do. Or think better thoughts. I mean, an affirmation can be anything you want it to be. I can do it. I said that earlier. I'm worthy. You just put it out there and say it enough until you believe it, you know, or say it daily. Put them on your fridge. Put them on your fridge. Like, I am going to walk 1 mile every day. And maybe you don't do it, but you have it up there, and it's a reminder, too. And maybe eventually you do start walking that mile every day, and it just becomes a part of your life. So I think that affirmations are really very helpful in that respect. Let's go into behavioral triggers now. Here's another thing that triggers irritability, and that's impulse control. When you just say something or do something that you didn't think it out, you just did it, and it causes a problem. And that can cause you some irritability after that. Managing time. You brought some of this up a little bit in the other one, Deb. You know, biting off too much that you can't get it all done. And so what does that make you feel? Inadequate. So we're going back to the negative feelings again. Makes you feel inadequate because you didn't get done what you needed to get done or trying to do too much. David, I know, has a to-do list that goes out the door, you know, and every day, I can tell you, he will complain that he didn't get enough done. And I understand it because I do the same thing without the brain injury. But with the brain injury, he's looking back again at that negative thing here of what he used to be able to do and how much he could get done before the brain injury, and now it takes him longer. And so that can cause an irritability. It's not an outward angry irritability that he displays, but he's angry at himself. He's irritable that he's not able to accomplish what he always accomplished easily, working 12 to 14-hour days. Even after his brain injury, when he went back to work, he was working a lot. But now he's realizing that he has to slow down a little bit. At a certain time of the day, his cognitive brain is like, okay, it's going mushy. It's like, I'm done, folks. I can do all this stuff, but I'm done with the thinking process, because people don't realize how strenuous that thinking process is and how much strain it puts on your brain. Hey, I like that. Strain on your brain. Cool. Anyhow, yeah, but it's just that kind of thing. And so one of the things that David does is he tries to, realize that he's only going to get one thing done or two things, depending on how intense they are or how time intensive they are. And you have to not beat yourself up that you didn't get it done. And I mean, like I said, I do the same thing. Like, why didn't I get anything done? I took a nap instead of getting my show ready. I have a chapter that I have to get edited and send off to my co-author, and I didn't do it yet. So it's 3:00 in the morning. I'm going to finish it. You know, that kind of stuff. Don't worry, Deb, I have it done. Deb and I are meeting tomorrow at 10:00 to work on chapter 20. And no, it's been done. It's done. But those are the kinds of things that can cause you to become irritable. You know, especially if I've stayed up to 3:00 and have to get up at 8:00 and I don't have enough sleep, so I'm sleep deprived. Irritability can come in. It can become a part of your life. What are your thoughts on behavioral triggers, Deb?
Well, I think, okay, so I find myself, you know, a lot of brain injury survivors have issues of disinhibition, that they open their mouths and stuff comes out, and they don't really think it. I was just talking to a friend of mine about how sometimes we laugh at things inappropriately, and that's one of the things that happens. I'll open my mouth.
Uh-huh.
I mean, one example. I'll open my mouth, stuff will come out that might be, oh, I don't know, might evoke some sort of emotional reaction. And I might hurt someone's feelings without meaning to. And that can get to me, as in, I didn't want to hurt them. Obviously, I did.
But again, I'm lucky with the brain injury that the stuff that comes out of my mouth makes me laugh sometimes. And I go, I'm sorry, I just, you know, I fell through a hole in my brain, my reaction.
Uh-huh.
And usually it works. But there are times when, you know, I open my mouth and I put both feet in it, you know, and it's just.
You do have a big mouth, don't you?
Yeah, it's very. I mean, laughing inappropriately. I mean, it makes you laugh inappropriately, that same disinhibition thing. You find yourself laughing at things. People look at you, give you that evil eye, and you're just going, oops, did it again. But then, lucky for me, I can laugh at myself, and I'll come back and apologize and explain. And hopefully it works. And if it doesn't work and they're still upset, there's not much I can do about it. I can let it go. I mean, there's another side of the bloody brain that has helped me is this business of, it's almost like, you know, classic mindfulness. I live very much in the moment for various reasons. I mean, part of it is the short-term memory issue. Another part is a short attention span. And I have a very firm, optimistic streak. So put all that together. If I'm having a bad brain day, oh, well, I know that it'll, the optimist in me goes, well, you know, in a couple of days it'll be over. For instance, if I have a really bad headache. Now, if I'm having a really good brain day, my brain goes, woohoo, life is good. It's always been good. Will always be good. I have these. So for the most part, life is good on those bad. And as time goes on and the brain heals, those good days, you get more and more of them. You never reach a point where you don't have any bad brain days at all. But in my mind, bad brain day, oh, well. It'll pass, you know, I have a horrendous headache. I know what I need to do to help it pass as soon as possible. And when it passes, okay, life is good, you know. So my personality has really helped me with it. But I think, you know, most people, you know, time really heals. And an important thing that both you and I say throughout is, you're not alone. There's always someone going through something similar. Well, clearly something worse. But there are parallels between brain injuries. There are a lot of the deficits. There are a lot of deficits that are common. Mm-hmm. If you're having a really bad brain day, another brain injury survivor will understand you. So, people like Donna and me, we're available for you. We're there to help you learn that it's okay. You're not alone. It does get better. I don't know how much better, but it will get better no matter what. Things will heal.
You can't think 100% better, but you can probably, may take a long time, but, you know, there are going to always keep your eyes out for the improvements. I always had the carrots in front of us. Every time David and I went to a doctor, just check out his eyes or check out his brain, his neurologist, I would always pick something that he said that was my carrot to make me go through the next few months. That, look at that. He said that this was better. This was improving. You know, and you always, not even going to the doctor. One day, David, mind you, David has severe balance issues, and he was standing at the washing machine. Something fell, and he actually bent down automatically, picked it up, and got back up. And I went, whoa. I mean, that was huge, about a huge balance accomplishment. And, of course, I just got on that one, and I rode that little pony for a long time because it was so fun to see that there was possibility. There was more possibility that he was going to get some more balance back. He didn't even mm-hmm. think about it. He just automatically did it. And I thought, well, if he is automatically doing it, maybe there's going to be more coming in the future. And, yeah, you're always looking for things like that to boost your morale, basically, you know, to keep you positive. So on thinking about impulsive behavior, some strategies I kind of thought about is if impulsive behavior means that it's happening without your control, obviously. But if you are aware that you are displaying compulsive behavior, that you don't have control over it, maybe you want to, when you're going to a party, you might want to review some things earlier and say, I don't want to do this, or I do want to do this. I better be careful when I'm near this person because I might say the wrong thing. You might want to think before acting to help to control your compulsive behavior. I know, I thought that was futile too, but but it's like, try, just try, Deb. I know, impulse. That's why I said impulsive behavior is impulsive, and you don't have any control over it. But maybe if you start making scenarios in your head, give me at least a little bite here.
Actually, no, that's very true, because if I have...
I mean, when I'm taken by surprise, I have much less control, if any. But if something,
but if I'm prepared, like this is the second time
something has happened, I deal with it in a much better way. And I think that's true of neurotypicals as well. That if you
find yourself in a bad situation. Well, if you're prepared, you know how to react to it in a good way. But if it takes you by surprise,
then, you know, God knows what will come out of my mouth. But so it has, that does really, if you can think about all the possible horrible scenarios,
or not necessarily horrible, it does help.
Can you always do that?
No, it depends on the situation.
No.
But, yeah.
It's impulsive.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point right there. Do your best. That's all anyone can really do. Anyone.
Yeah.
Is do your best at whatever you're attempting. Another thing to managing time or trying to do too much, use a to-do list or a planner to help manage time. So at least maybe you have it written down in front of you, typed out on your computer, and so you can, one of the things I do when I do my to-do list, I go back and forth on to-do lists. Sometimes I use them for a long, long time, and then I just get too lazy to use them. But it also is a nice log, journal kind of thing, too, and only meaning jotting down and date-wise. I don't mean journal, writing out thoughts, but... It's so a good log to know the kinds of things I did and when I did them, to keep myself more organized. It's not an easy thing to do, but what I will, I'll write something down. Okay, so for example, I have a drumming session tomorrow. I'm going to go to a drumming class, so that's on my to-do list with tomorrow's date. Now I know when I look at my to-do list, I know that's what I'm doing that day. And when I finish with that, I put a check mark next to it, and I put the date mark so that it's done, and I highlight it in a different color. It's a green or something, meaning it's over, it's done. And so I can look back and see all of the things I accomplished. Some people just cross them off, which I used to do in a journal that I kept when I was trying to keep ahead of David's brain injury when he was in the hospital in the rehab in the beginning years. And then I would just cross it off, and when the whole page was done, then I'd put a star at the top saying, I'm done with this page. I don't ever have to look back at it again. Some people like to just erase them. So if it's on the computer, I know David does. He just gets rid of it. If it's done, it's gone, it's over. His list looks a little bit better, I guess. But I like to keep it so I know that if I have to go back and say, oh, yeah, I did do this, I had to send in the payment, the tax bill. I had to send that in. And I know exactly when I did it because it's still on my to-do list from last April 2023. You know, so that sort of thing. So a planner to help you manage your time.
There's several problems with that with brain injury survivors. One is lack of organizational skills.
Yeah.
So to write down a to-do list is a big deal. The other thing is if your to-do list includes more than two or three items, that can be overwhelming, and you freeze and don't do anything. And the only I tried to-do lists, and I just ended up throwing them out because I couldn't deal with it. So I ended up with, you know, shorter task lists where, okay, now I can do this. I'd have a daily task list with two items on it, and I'd block times off in my calendar when, you know, this is when I'll do them. This is when I'll work on them.
Mm-hmm.
More than that, I just couldn't handle. And I was told by my neuropsychologist, whatever you do, don't use Post-its. You want things in a central place. Well, needless to say, my organizational skills prevented me to have something in a central place. So I had a lot of Post-its all over the place. And some of those Post-its I came back to a couple of years later, and I still don't know what they were about. My taking abilities were just down the tubes. I think I told you this particular one.
Yeah.
Where I had this Post-it note that said, Tuesday lunch. I don't know.
Right.
I found it. I don't know how long ago I'd written it. Had no idea which Tuesday. No idea. I knew it was about eating lunch with someone. Had no idea who it was for. And, you know, it just turned into this joke. No idea what it was about. But
I hope they're still not waiting for you.
I don't know. Too late. But
yeah, I know.
There are a lot of these things that for brain injury survivors, they're really, really hard to do and at times actually impossible to do.
Yeah.
And you learn your limitations, you learn to work around them, or you learn to cope with them. You know, you learn you can't dwell on stuff. It's just not worth
right.
it. Too short. And there are all these brilliant ideas of how to deal with it, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
And sometimes it doesn't, exactly.
Yeah, and it's just the way it is. And at first, the first few years, it drives you crazy. But after a while, you stop comparing yourself to the previous few. You stop sweating the small stuff. It's just not worth it. It really
exactly.
isn't.
You know, and that's kind of what we're doing here is just presenting different strategies because some of the strategies will work for some people, especially those that are not cognitively disabled, is the strategy of the to-do list. Somebody that has memory loss or organizational skills probably can't do that and can refer or go back to your task list with less things on it. You know, this is where we go back and say you take what you can and use what you can that's going to make your life better. Because all we're doing here is providing suggestions for folks and say, I can do this one. Oh, no. You know, like you right away thought, Deb, no. And I knew you'd say that because I know what you think. And we've written about this stuff, so I know what it is. So so what David is doing and what I did and what other people do, everybody's going to have it tweaked a little bit differently to meet their specifications. So the way I did my journal in the beginning was perfect for me, but it wouldn't be perfect for you. And it's not perfect for David because I suggested it to him and it's not something he wants to do. But The way he, you know, goes after it, and he says, well, I just want to see him gone. I don't want to see a list there. And for me, yeah. I want to see a list. I want to see the accomplishments I made, and he just wants to see what he has to do to keep it down less. So, I mean, that's what we're doing, is like letting everybody make decisions on what you can use to make your life easier. We're suggesting strategies or compensations, just pick up what you can and throw away the rest.
Here's something that I learned recently about, you know, we're talking about positive ways of thinking to help you through the bad stuff, and that is, okay, do a to-do list, but also do a ta-da list, as in, this is what I've accomplished today. And that has helped me immensely. Instead of going, it's me, I can't do all this, but hey, look what I have done today. And that's helped
me.
That has just been incredible.
Well, you know, that's how I ran my classroom. I never had a to-do list in my classroom. I always had it in my head. I kind of know what I'm supposed to do with my first graders, but I always recorded what I actually did and then moved on from that to the next day. It's like, okay, so this group read pages 14 through 16 in their reader, in their book. And this group worked at the library and read together and discussed whatever, you know, and I would keep accurate records for everybody so that I would know what they actually did. But there are just so many methods that you can incorporate into your life to fit what you need. So that's one of the things. So we have two more things, and I'm already out of time. Relationship problems, misunderstandings between spouses and other family members. I'm wondering if we shouldn't just keep some of this and do another show with this, because I have several topics more to go that I think are important.
We can do another one.
It's already. Maybe we should. Because I don't want it. I'm just going to, you know, rattle these off, and it's not going to give them the due that they need. So I'm going to say we're going to stop here because it is almost 7:45, and I know that I don't think there's another show coming on after me. So not immediately. No, I don't think there is a show after me tonight, unless I get booked on after. And so we could probably go till 50, but they also might cut me off. I've been cut off before, so I don't want that to happen again. It doesn't feel good. So anyhow, let me just say to everybody, I just want to say to Deb again, Deb Brandon, thank you again for this wonderful conversation about irritability. And you actually didn't even get irritable with me tonight. Hey.
I've ever gotten
irritable
with you.
Oh.
Have I?
Really?
Have I ever gotten
irritable
with
you? No.
I'm glad.
You haven't? I'm just dagging you. I'm just trying to make you get worried that have I? And I did it. I did it. Okay. So, no, you've never been irritable with me. I'm just making a joke, obviously a bad one. Okay. So you can always learn more about Deb Brandon at her website at debbrandon.com. And don't forget to go check out SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com to find out about TBI survivors and caregivers and all kinds of information. There's so much stuff on that web, and it's actually gotten awards 3 years in a row for being a top TBI website in the country. I didn't check to see if it was any further than that, but I'm happy with that. Don't forget to read my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. You'll get full insight into what TBI, you know, wreaked in our lives and how we are making lemonade. Yeah. And let's see. Don't forget also to check out, you could find out more about my book, too, at Donna Figurski, O'Donnell.com. Just take out the O'Donnell part there. DonnaFigurski.com. And then check out Bookity Blog, too. That's really a good sub page on that website. So the next show is going to be Determined. I'm in talking with another guest right now, so we'll see what happens with the next show in 2 weeks. And remember to tune in every second and fourth Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time to listen to Lisa Dreyer. She is the host of Mess with MS. On the first, her shows are the first and the fourth. I know the second and the fourth Sunday. My shows are the first and the third Sunday. So yeah. So if you love my show, please tell 10 of your friends. If you hate it, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me, but come back anyhow. Okay, so I'll see you on the next show, which will be that third Sunday, the 17th, St. Patrick's Day of March. So yeah, so again, Deb, thank you very, very much for joining me tonight and engaging in this lovely conversation.
Thank you. Always fun.
Okay, and I will see everybody in 2 weeks. Take good care, and just be careful out there. Okay, good night, everybody. Bye-bye.